Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Xochitl Nemega, State Director of the Working Families Party. Welcome back, Xochitl. Always a pleasure to have you with us.
Delighted to be here.
Okay, so let's start with the obvious question. What is the Working Families Party?
Well, the Working Families Party is a grassroots multiracial progressive party in New York State, founded in 1998, with the interest and intent to shift the state in a more pro-democracy, equity-driven direction. And so we started that by first trying to flip seats red to blue and really focused on delivering majorities in the state Senate and the Assembly. And as we've become a triple blue state, we're working to ensure that the Democrats who show up in Albany and in Washington, D.C. are working families Democrats. They're Democrats who are aligned with the people's interests, not the interests of the wealthy few. And we do that through organizing, through endorsing and running strong working families candidates up and down the state, and try to deliver a legislative agenda that ensures that everyone in the state can live with dignity and thrive.
So, Xochitl, it sounds to me like you're sort of Democrats, but you're working families. What's the difference?
Well, we're aligned with the Democratic Party, in particular here in New York State, where the most active contest happened in the primary, and it's in our intent and our goal to ensure that the most progressive candidate comes out of the primary and then therefore goes to lead in Albany or in Washington, D.C. I think as we're seeing the extremism and the divisiveness of the Republican Party, there's no question that Democrats are better served to lead in our state. And so we're working both inside and outside the Democratic Party to ensure that their agenda reflects where the people are. But we believe that we need a separate vehicle because there are real structural deficits and impediments in the big tent of the Democratic Party that goes all the way from, fossil fuel companies to, young people. And so we do believe that people deserve a party in which their values are not disconnected from the path to win.
So who are you? Who is Xochitl? And how did she get to be the head of this operation?
Well, I'm a born and raised New Yorker. My parents are Nigerian immigrants who came in the 70s and 80s. Raised us in the Bronx and then Westchester County. I'm a longtime organizer. I, went to university and got really swept up in the labor movement. Cafeteria and custodial workers at my university were an active labor force, and I learned how to organize through knocking on doors, through house visits, through sitting in packed churches with people collectively trying to create a vision for a world that works for all of us. I then went and organized casino workers. I did, elections in Connecticut, from Senator Chris Murphy's election to Mayor Tony Harp's election. And I went to law school to learn how labor law could really empower and embolden working people. I was proud to be able to come back to my home state, where I'm raising my almost six-year-old, and really build a political home that I did not have growing up, where people like me were, children of immigrants or new immigrants or young people or Black women are not the first doors that get knocked on generally in elections, are not the voters that are the most chased after for our involvement. I want to build a political party that was seeking to level the playing field and to, you know, reinvigorate our politics here in New York. I've been doing this for 3 years, and it's pretty fun.
What makes you angry?
There are things. I mean, I think exploitation, absolutely exploitation. I think racial division, which also breeds on exploitation. And what we're seeing in particular during the pandemic, the rabid profiteering that we saw of corporations who are really doing quite well on the backs of working people, whether it's Amazon, whose service became essential during the pandemic, but whose workforce was completely shunted and uninvested in, whether it's the fact that you know, street vendors or undocumented workers helped move us through this pandemic and then were left out of relief until the Excluded Workers Fund. Whether it's home health aides who are taking care of our workforce and fundamentally are not invested in. So the exploitation that we see in our economic and political system that we're really trying to address, I think, keeps me going because we know it does not have to be this way.
So tell us a little bit about your personal history and how you, Sochi, got involved in this to the point where you're leading this effort.
Well, I think that, you know, I've had a lot of experiences that have really deepened my commitment and my belief in collective action, whether it was organizing in university or, you know, I worked as a casino cocktail waitress in Miami after graduating right at the height of the recession when so many of my classmates and peers were really looking for work and not understanding how the last generation, you know, chose to bail out banks, but left our families, you know, really struggling. And I knew that I felt most strength and most comfort and belief in humanity when I am in lockstep, you know, shoulder to shoulder with other people pushing together for something meaningful. And so my experience organizing with myself and my co-workers in a, you know, casino in the belly of the beast in Miami, Florida, just filled me with such hope and belief that when everyday ordinary people are invested in, when they know that someone has their back, so much becomes possible. And we can actually take control of our destiny. But we can't do that alone. And that is what has always propelled me in my personal life, in my work life, and fundamentally in the work of the Working Families Party, which is together we can do anything. Divided, you know, we're on the menu. So let's do something big together.
So, Sochi, what did you learn as a cocktail waitress?
Oh, I learned that there's a lot of pain in this world, right? Both from our customers who came in, who were battling all sorts of addiction, from our customers who were facing foreclosure, who were dealing with immigration struggles, who were coming to the casino for a bit of relief, and then also then imparting some amount of harm and trauma on those of us who were serving them. So just this, the sense that, you know, there is this collective trauma that, you know, on both sides, the customers, the servers, the managers, I learned that, you know, the enemy is not, you know, the visible person who's necessarily imparting harm on you, but that there are structural systems that are really making it impossible for most of us, you know, to get by. I learned how to organize. I learned that I came out of college having studied feminist studies, having studied history, and had all of these labels. You know, I was a Afro-feminist, you know, Marxist. I had all of the labels. And fundamentally, when you get into organizing and you just want to talk to people, you have to talk from your experience, not from the labels or the theory or the hashtags, but really from heart to heart, as from your lived experience. Me as a daughter of immigrants, as a young woman, as someone who really believes that we deserve better, and just building connection based on that shared understanding and humanity, that is better than any book that I ever read. That's better than any perfectly leveled Gramsci quote I can put out. It's really about heart to heart. And I think that applies to our electoral work too. When you knock on someone's door, find out how they are, ask them how their kids are doing, and build a connection based on our shared understanding as people in this world.
We're talking to Sochi Nemega, the state director of the Working Families Party in New York. So can we count on the Working Families Party developing into something that is more than it even is now?
oh, I think we are really at a point and a place where it's clear how important and needed our party is, and that we only can grow from here, right? I think that, you know, when I started this organization, I really wanted to ensure, when I started in this role, that we were really invested in building the grassroots, right? That our party was felt and seen in all corners of the state, and that everyday people know how to plug into our party. And so with our organizers, we've built, you know, 15 chapters since, you know, since January 2020, from Ithaca and Syracuse, you know, down to Queens, where people come together and do politics and do endorsements together. I think that's one big thing. The next thing we want to do was really to have a legislative agenda that was clearly connected to the desires and vision of our community and our members, and to go out with bold proposals, right? In the moment of the pandemic, we're really pushing to tax the rich to invest in the public good. You know, that was, it's a boldly popular idea across the state. A majority of New Yorkers believe that we should make sure that the wealthy pay what they owe in taxes to invest in the public good. And so we set off to really lead a big campaign with our partners called Invest in Our New York that delivered record wins in New York State. And in this moment, we want to ensure that the Working Families Party helps put out an agenda that meets voters where they are and ensure that they know that government has their back. And so working with our partners in the legislature, that is our goal. Our goal is also to do a lot of base building in cities up and down the state, Syracuse, Utica, obviously New York City, Kingston, and really connect and toss out this false sense of this upstate, downstate divide, but really talk about shared ideals and shared goals. And so we are flexing. We believe that we need to grow. We want to grow if we want to deliver the kind of New York that we know working people need. And so we're always actively seeking out partners and seeking out opportunities to do that even more deeply.
So, Shanamika, let me ask you this. How does the Working Families Party envision working with Governor Hochul now that she's won election as the first woman governor of New York? What are the key issues that progressives are expecting her to deliver on?
We're relieved and fortified that Governor Hochul is going back to Albany. I think there is no doubt what a disaster Lee Zeldin have been for people across the state. And so in this moment, what we believe from, which was evident from the election, is that Democrats need to put forward a bold progressive vision for the state, a path towards universal child care, a path towards health care for everyone, regardless of documentation status, regardless of employment status, which also is a deeply popular issue up and down the state across lines of difference. We believe that we have to insist that the ultra wealthy and corporations pay what they owe in taxes, and that has to be on the agenda. And that New York must continue to lead with bold response to climate change, that we can have a real plan to decarbonize our economy, that we can have a real plan to ensure that frontline communities are made resilient and have don't have to be terrified that each flood or each, you know, rainy day will become a deadly flood. Those are all imperative opportunities for us this year. I think the housing crisis really rises to the top for me because we see that that is a matter of utmost importance across all lines of difference, up and down the state. And that right now we're not leading with the urgency and the seriousness that ensures that all New Yorkers are adequately and affordably housed. And so that is an opportunity for us to really dig in. Housing, climate, addressing rising costs through universal child care, through universal health care, and just ensuring that government is accountable first and foremost to the people in the state.
So how do you think the media is doing in your battle? Are they behaving well, or are they, in fact, part of the problem?
Well, I think we see, you know, a lot of great attention in the last weeks, really dissecting the political moment we're in. I know some people are talking about, you know, finger-pointing or blame game. I think in particular, we see with the media and what we're trying to do ourselves politically is to debrief results that we can ensure that we're not in the situation we're in again. These races this year, this governor's race, was way too close for comfort, and too many voters talked about not really being reached out to. And so I think the media has been really elevating some of these issues and flashpoints in a way that I think is important for us to dissect. On the other side of the spectrum, we saw the real dangerous, deeply political fear-mongering that's coming from the Post directly, you know, explicitly in support of Lee Zeldin campaign. And I think that clickbait fear-mongering rhetoric is so dangerous, so divisive, and so non-factual. I think that is a real concern and a real kind of impediment to democratic participation and conversation. And so we see that there's a spectrum of, you know, media responsibility and behavior, and we have to address some of the bad actors for sure.
Do you find that New York, well, to put it bluntly, is a racist state?
Well, I believe that racism is structural and systemic. And so systems create division, create exploitation. Policies reflect that and exasperate and accelerate that, right? The pandemic revealed racial divisions and revealed inequality, right? The pandemic did not create those or reflected them. And so our job is to ensure that our policies are addressing the systemic racism that exists and is the foundation of our society and our country's very being. And so when we think about our agenda, we always think about a structural change agenda. How are we not just changing the numbers or the faces, but how are we recognizing that racism is embedded in every part of our economy, right? In how housing gets allocated, in where people live and how that addresses their vulnerability to climate, in how our schools are funded, and who has food access. And so unless we are addressing a structural change agenda, we are just kind of coding over what is very much deeply ingrained in our society.
If you had your way in terms of who would lead the state of New York, what have you seen? I mean, have you seen Andrew Cuomo being successful and sort of being ousted? Who would you like to see leading the state?
Well, I think what we see, which is quite powerful, is shared leadership that's coming from many different directions, right? The state Senate has really been moving forward with focus and clarity about moving us in a progressive direction, right? Ensuring that we have, you know, justice in our criminal legal system, ensuring that we expand, you know, universal child care, pushing for public financing in our campaign election. So, you know, under the leadership of Andrew Stewart Cousins, we've seen that movement. And then within her body, there are lots of fantastic leaders who are really leading. Senator Julia Salazar on criminal justice, you know, Senator Jessica Ramos on child care and labor issues, Senator Zelnor Myrie on election law, right? So it's a leaderful conference. I think it's important to have those multiple you know, points of leadership. In the assembly, we have fantastic leaders, you know, Karina Reyes, who is a former nurse, right, who's leading in the assembly. Khalil Anderson, the youngest member of the assembly in the Rockaways, right? There's so many to name Samar Brook, right, who represents up in Rochester, and then Leah Webb, who's joined in Buffalo. I think what is exciting in this moment is that the pipeline of progressive candidates is building a real leaderful bench of people up and down the state. And so we believe that we want to continue to invest in that, and also to ensure that the movement leaders and community leaders, whether they're leading organizations like Make the Road New York, who ensures that immigrants, you know, have justice and dignity in our state, whether it's someone like El Joy, who leads the, you know, NAACP, right? There are multiple axes of leadership that we believe helps move the state holistically in the right direction.
Are you ready to run for office yourself?
I'm an organizer through and through. And so my job is to help build the plan, to recruit the team, and make sure that we win.
And you're doing that by?
I'm doing that by deeply investing in where I live. So both, you know, I live down in Mount Vernon and CD 16. I work very closely with our Congressman Jamal Bowman and his team to ensure that we address, you know, the deep disparity between Mount Vernon and Bronxville, or Mount Vernon and Scarsdale, right, both in our district. I work with leaders in the New York City Council to help them move forward their vision. I help recruit candidates up and down the state and ensure that they have what they need to be successful. And I try to train organizers. We have a great staff team of organizers and strategists who are, building everywhere to ensure that people can help realize their visions. And so that is what my role in the movement is. I'm also a mother and involved in my child's education and in our community here in Mount Vernon. And so those are the roles that I'm going to play in this moment.
A lot of people say that, but in the end, they try to become the moving force in a movement. Do you have any such plans?
I have no such plans besides ensuring the Working Families Party is a moving force in the movement. And so that is what my eye is squarely focused on right now.
When you look back on Andrew Cuomo, what do you see as something that might be avoided in the future?
I think one of the biggest takeaways in this leadership transition was that how you lead is as meaningful as what you deliver in your leadership. I think we see that in terms of different leadership styles, and something that many people are giving credit to Governor Hochul is a focus more on collaboration and less on domination.
Is that a woman-man thing?
I mean, we definitely have seen that gender and identity plays a big role in how people lead. And so, there are the tropes of toxic masculinity. There are the ways in which men are taught to lead. That is true. Whether that can be fully ascribed? No, because we've seen many collaborative male leaders out there. And so I do think that there is a personal choice in that as well. We see studies of women and people of color leading in a different way. I think that does has to do with identity as well. But what matters is that leadership styles then have an effect on what kind of policy outcomes we have for working people. So not just a personality thing. If someone is not driven to get the best ideas, to encourage different leadership and other voices to put forward their positions, you end up with an echo chamber and you end up with policy outcomes that are only meant to reflect the boss's desires. And so one of the biggest takeaways from, this moment is toxic work environments have deeply negative effects on the state and kind of the community as a whole. And I think that Governor Hochul has really sought to embrace a different style of leadership that has allowed many people, including, as people, members of the Assembly, members of the Senate, to put forward smart solutions, to really put forward a winning agenda because they don't have to be overly concerned with interpersonal dynamics. So I think that is one big takeaway about leadership in this post-Cuomo era.
So tell me whether or not you see an opportunity here for more women to really take leadership roles.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're seeing in all across the political spectrum and in many different organizations, right? If you're looking, for example, at the big labor unions in New York State, the number of which of them are led by women political directors, right, is really significant, from CWA to 32BJ, the nurses union, up and down the state. So you see that leadership in the institution. And then in government, the governor's staff is overwhelmingly female. All the deputy mayors and Mayor Adams' administration is. Leader Heastie just rolled out his list of new leadership that I believe is 100% women. And so I do think that only it's a moment, but I think it's a recognition of a lot of talent across the state and an opportunity to plug more women into really important roles that will have meaningful difference. I think the other thing I'll say is that something I learned from the union is that a lot of the women leaders in the union that I grew up in, Unite Here, were already leaders in their communities, right? They're matriarchs of their communities. They're leaders in the church, in their PTAs, they're ahead of their household. And so there's already many roles, leadership roles, recognized or not, that women play in our society. And what we're seeing now is a more public expression of that. And with that, I think comes a real progressive agenda. Mothers and caregivers know very well what role universal child care could play in our communities, why we need to raise the minimum wage, what transportation justice and access does, you know, for women and families in particular. So I think that grounding in lived experience and new voices is having a tremendous effect in the well-being of all people, you know, in New York State.
So the question then is, so she does New York take care of its working families? For example, with higher wages, family leave.
We have made a lot of progress, right? In the 2019 legislative session, we saw historic investments in climate action. We saw the best, you know, tenant protections in the state. You know, we invested in the criminal legal system. The campaign finance program was rolled out. What we need to do is implement and invest in a lot of those programs, right? We have a lot of the laws on paper. Now we have to really put the power of the budget behind them. We have to address the housing crisis. We have to address the eviction crisis, you know, by ensuring that we have deeply affordable housing. Good cause eviction will address rising rents and ensure we can keep people in their homes. So I think good cause eviction is a bill that is popular and that will have effect up and down the state. And then we have to build more quality, affordable housing, right? We do have to build to ensure that we can meet the demand, that we can address our homeless crisis. And, that, you know, upstate where affordable housing often looks like a precarious relationship with a landlord on an unregulated property, we have to ensure that we're providing people with safe, affordable, dignified housing.
We are out of time. Our guest has been Soshi Nemeka, the state director of the Working Families Party in New York. Soshi, you're terrific. Thank you so much for spending all this time with us, and we really appreciate it.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Alan. Thank you so much for having me.